from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hemp hits one in the air, deep center field. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Get out the tape measure for Ian Hemp. Cubs lead 1-0. Dead center. It landed on the roof beyond the green shrubbery. A drive of about 440 feet. Hemp is warming up.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, Hep looks like the player that you expect him to be. Part of back-to-back home runs yesterday for the Cubs in a 6-5 win over the Giants. Pat Hughes on the call right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am Mark Crotty. Thanks for being with us here tonight. The Cubs actually had the day off today. When you're the Cubs and you're 36-39 and the season has been, I don't know, crazy, I guess, a day off is good for everybody involved. The Cubs off today. They host the Mets tomorrow at 1:20. Shota Imbanaga against Jose Quintana for a little bit of interest right there. Let's talk more, though, about the Cubs with Megan Montemurro, Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. You should follow her on X at M_Montemurro. And Megan, I do understand the value of a day off when you are covering most of a 162-game baseball season. So I mean it when I say thank you, Megan, for joining us tonight on The Score.
You're welcome.
You know, I'm thinking about Ian Happ and the fact that he hits the home run yesterday. So did Dansby Swanson and the big two-run single. In each of these games where the Cubs end up taking 2 out of 3 from San Francisco, they scored 5 or more runs, which has been a relative rarity. They also hit home runs in each of these games. And I know that there were men left on base still, but is there anything to suggest that there's been any kind of breakthrough collectively with this offense? And I know I'm not giving you much of a sample size here.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of hard to say whether it's a turning point stretch for them in a positive way. It's something that Craig Counsell mentioned recently where, you know, they'd have a game or so where it looked like things were turning offensively. And basically he was like, you know, you're not really going to know it was a turning point until maybe two or three weeks after the fact. So I think it's probably a little hard to say that right now, but I will say there's certainly been encouraging signs. Ian Happ now over a couple weeks has been looking really locked in, driving the ball. Dansby Swanson has looked better since the start of the month, especially you look at his last two home runs have been to the opposite field. That's a really good sign for where he's at. You know, so I think those are obviously two key guys you want to see if you're the Cubs. Obviously, Cody Bellinger getting locked in. They really need Nico Horner, especially with Mike Tauchman out for at least a month, and Horner's going to be up at the top of the lineup. They need him to be getting on base more consistently and hitting for average. So there's still a bunch of pieces that they still really need to get going, but having at least, you know, two guys looking locked in and getting going is better than what it was for about that 4-week to 6-week stretch where the entire lineup was frigid. So definitely some steps in the right direction, but now the key for them is they have to carry that into this weekend series against the Mets. They need to be building some momentum as you get into late June, early July. if they're really going to give Jed Hoyer a good reason to invest in this team at the trade deadline.
Yeah, you're right. And Hoyer just said it recently with you guys, basically saying, you guys better get hot. You better figure this out, because I don't have some magic player who's going to swoop in right now and help you guys out. Wasn't that sort of what Jed was trying to say?
Yeah, I mean, he basically was like, yeah, there's nobody we're bringing up from AAA that is going to become this impact bat the second we put him in the lineup. It's going to be the guys that are on the roster, the guys that they've paid a lot of money to perform. And, I mean, when you look at this roster as a whole, and this is certainly part of the risk in this kind of roster building direction, is they certainly raised the floor of what this team could be with, you know, the types of players that they invested in over multi-year deals, guys that, you know, their career numbers are really strong. They're above average, generally really reliable players, but there's no superstar that you have in this lineup. So you collectively need this group to be pretty locked in a consistent basis where you have 3-4 guys rolling that you can count on, because there's not going to be that one guy who over, you know, a week stretch here and there, you know, is really going to be carrying this team. And so, you know, they need that performance. And yeah, he made clear that the answer is going to come from them hitting like they did in April. And so that's going to come with the group that they have. Obviously, you know, they're going to be without Mike Tauchman at the top of the lineup for a bit, who is leading the team in on base percentage. So, you know, they're going to have to continue to have a patient approach, get guys on base. Their sluggers are going to need to slug as, you know, we continue to get through summer. But yeah, you know, Jed Hoyer, you know, is believing still in this group that he has. But he also made clear that their performance is going to dictate how much prospect capital will be moved at the trade deadline. And so if they're not rolling, you know, that's certainly going to be a factor in the decisions he makes.
And that makes me think about Pete Crow Armstrong, who has been the one guy who has broken through to the real roster. And I know some of that is out of necessity. Some of it is merit, because he was playing well there. Is that the kind of guy that they're talking about when they talk about prospects, or are they talking about some of their other guys that they have stocked away in their farm system right now?
Yeah, no, I mean, Pete Armstrong is clearly going to be a part of this team right now and in the future. He's only continuing to get better. Really, it's you know, they have a top 2, top 3 farm system. So really, it's taking the depth and talent that they have there and moving that for proven major league talent.
Okay. So they look at PCA as part of the core, that he will be the one guy that's allowed to maybe on and off develop at the big league level this year?
Yes, for sure. I mean, you know, some of that will be roster construction and playing time, but with Tauchman out, Craig Counsell, you know, mentioned Pete Crow Armstrong and Michael Bush, who had been part of kind of that 3-person rotation of playing time lately, that they're the two that are going to benefit from being in the lineup more with Tauchman out. And obviously you see what PCA does defensively in center field. He's already one of the best at that. And, you know, he's a constant threat to steal bases. He's second in the majors since June, since the beginning of June in stolen bases. So really it's still refining, you know, his offensive profile and performance at the plate. But, you know, when you have the defensive speed that he has, that's certainly an asset.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He has not been caught stealing yet. It's, I think, 15 for 15, Megan. Does that sound right? 15 or 16, something like that. He's absolutely has not been caught this year. What's the potential with him as far as slug is concerned? Like, what is he supposed to be? Because he feels like an outlier or an old school player that, you know, the speed and the defense, and I know that comes in a little bit more handy in this version of MLB these days as well, but like, what's the ideal picture? Remind me of that with PCA in terms of a player that they'd like to see when it's finally molded.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, like, he is still super young, and that's, again, something that Council has, you know, made sure to remind everyone, yes, of since really spring training. Like, Council has kids his age that are in college. And so, like, he is still young and developing. He's still going to get stronger. I mean, he's definitely shown some of the potential of what he can do. I mean, obviously, you know, hitting that home run for his first big league hit. Like, he has the potential for more consistent power in his bat. I think that's just going to come with a more consistent approach. The speed and small ball, you know, is always a constant threat and pressure that he can put on opposing defenses. So there's definitely the potential for more consistency of driving the ball in the gaps, more doubles, more home runs. And I think you're going to see that, you know, as he continues to improve and continues to mature physically.
Talking to Megan Montemurro, Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. I'm Mark Grody on The Score. Megan, if tomorrow Cubs and Mets playing 120 at Wrigley Field, 12:45 right here on The Score, if the Cubs are in a situation where they need a closer in the ninth, who do you think is going to get the baseball from Craig Counsell tomorrow?
I would not be surprised to see it be Hector Neris, which I know Cubs fans are frustrated with him. But the reality is, when you look at that bullpen, I mean, without Edward Elzeli, without Julian Merriweather, you know, there's only so many options Craig Counsell has. And, you know, he points to the experience. He's pitched in big moments. He's won a World Series. And, you know, and the fact is, even if he weren't used in the ninth, he still would be pitching in high leverage situations in like the eighth inning that impact the outcome of the game. So it's not like they don't use Hector, that he's not being used in any high leverage spots. So, but you've also seen a willingness from Counsell, you know, if Neris isn't available, you know, he went to Keegan Thompson, who struck out the side in the ninth on Tuesday, went to Colton Brewer on Wednesday for the save, whose stuff looked good, and he worked around two walks in which he got ahead of the batters. And so you know, he's been willing to use different guys when needed, but you're still going to see a healthy dose of the combination of Mark Leiter Jr. and Hector Neris in the eighth and ninth innings, because frankly, those are their best options right now. And, you know, there's going to be risk in those scenarios. I mean, pretty much with whoever they choose, there's a lot of growth going on with the guys that they have in the bullpen. Some of those guys still are getting experience at the big league level in those roles. And so, you know, it's obviously not an ideal setup. And you would think that obviously the bullpen would again be an area that they need to address at the trade deadline. But for now, you know, Neris is a guy that they trust, and, you know, he's going to have to get it done better than he has in the last couple outings, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you hoped that maybe somebody would stumble into it. You mentioned, you know, Colton Brewer, who was fine. You know, he did walk a couple guys just for the hell of it. You know, Tyson Miller gives up the big homer yesterday. And Keegan Thompson, as you said, he was very good in what he did. I definitely don't look and say, oh, that's the closer. But you were hoping that somebody would fall into it. Unfortunately for the Cubs right now, that Hector Neris is as far. He has struggled mightily, but he is. There is a track record there, and I think is that what it is more than anything, that even though he's struggling, the body of work is bigger than that of Albert Alzolay when they pulled the plug on him, and then in the name of not necessarily trusting other people right now over Neris to do that job.
Yeah, certainly experience is a factor, and look, like, I mean, after the blown save on Monday, you know, Counsell was like, basically said, like, he didn't think Hector pitched all that poorly. I mean, there was the catcher interference call on Amaya.
Yeah.
Obviously, the walk wasn't good. But again, he got a little unlucky on a night where the wind was blowing out. You know, Counsell basically was like, it was a fly ball, which, you know, according to advanced metrics, which I know some people don't want to hear it when, you know, you see the home run go out of the park, but like the fly ball had an expected average of 0.050. So, you know, obviously the conditions at Wrigley are going to impact games,
sure,
when the wind is blowing in or out, but, you know, he didn't feel like he pitched that poorly on Monday night. So sometimes, you know, things aren't going to go your way. The Cubs have obviously experienced that quite a bit offensively with some bad luck this season. But, yeah, I mean, Neris is a guy that Counsell made clear that he's going to be relying on, and he's going to be used in some of those spots. And so really the key is, you know, making sure that he's in the zone. He's had some issues with his fastball being slugged, so he needs to be better with his command on that. But yeah, I mean, his experience is something that council obviously values in those positions.
What do you think of what Kyle Hendricks did yesterday and the billion-dollar question? Is it sustainable? Did he find something? Is he back?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most interesting parts of his post-game interview when we were talking to him was him bluntly saying, like, I didn't earn this opportunity to be back in the rotation. And, you know, that it only happened because of Jordan Wicks and Ben Brown's injuries, which, you know, I think says a lot about his willingness to acknowledge the struggles he's had. You know, he can't hide from those. He can't run from the past numbers, but I thought it was really impressive, not only just what he did yesterday, which obviously stood out, but, you know, what he's been doing out of his last couple outings. And the key, though, yesterday, you know, he gave a lot of credit to Miguel Amaya for calling the curveball as much as he did, and also calling for elevated fastballs. He basically was saying that, you know, it made him feel uncomfortable using those pitches in certain situations, and it made him think, well, if I'm not expecting myself to throw it in this moment, then the hitter probably isn't either.
Yeah.
So he really gave a lot of credit to Miguel Amaya for the game that he called, but obviously, you know, it comes down to executing, and he did a really good job executing his stuff. He had his most swing and misses in two seasons. He struck out his most batters in a game since 2021. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't, I don't think, fluky. I mean, he commanded his stuff. He located it. That's what he has to do. And that's what had gotten him in trouble, you know, prompting the move to the bullpen. He just had not been commanding his stuff well enough. And so I think that's the most encouraging part of his performance, that it didn't feel like a fluky outing. It felt like he really was dominating like he needed to.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that you mentioned that I did not necessarily notice was that you said Miguel Amaya was calling the game. Hadn't Kendricks been calling most of his own games? Did that change, or has he just been doing that intermittently? Catch me up on that.
Yeah. So there had been a little bit of an adjustment early in the season where so Hendricks still has influence on what he calls, but as some of those outings had stacked up that weren't going so well, they kind of made an adjustment where Amaya had maybe a little bit more influence on suggestions within the course of the game. And so, yeah, it's something that he definitely had a role in with his outing yesterday.
That's great stuff. Megan, thank you so much for your time. I am not keeping you any longer than this on your day off, and enjoy your day back at Wrigley tomorrow. Thank you, Megan.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, that is Megan Montemurro. Always great insight and information. Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. Follow her now on X at @M_Montemurro. This series, like, it's pretty amazing that the Cubs won the series because of how awful that first loss on Monday was. They lose to San Francisco 7-6. That's where Neris gives up the 3-run bomb to Estrada, which, as Megan was just saying, like, it just really shouldn't have been a home run because the wind was blowing out. But yeah. That's why the advanced metrics are there. They are there. Like, if the players reject them, fine. But they're there for us to win arguments. Ian Happ hitting the 3-run homer in that game, which I talked about early, felt like a spectacular moment at Wrigley Field this year. Like, that they overcame that and won the next two games. In that game, though, like, the dramatic stuff was the dramatic stuff. But the Cubs, as I was watching the game on Monday, I'm like, oh, man. I'm watching them do a couple things, which I'm going to tell you about here in a second. I'm like, they are playing desperately. Cubs were on the verge of just doing anything possible, rolling dice. The Mike Talkman in that Monday game, early in the game, Mike Talkman thrown out trying to tag up from first to second base. I mean, that's a real risk. Unless you're Albert Elmore in Game 7 in Cleveland. It always is. It's just not the best path. usually from first to second, tagging up, and Talkman was thrown out trying to, like, oh God. I mean, like, of course you're like, what are you doing? But then it's like, all right, got to do something.
Why can I see you bringing up Albert Almora in the World Series? Why can I just envision Pete Crow Armstrong being that aggressive runner in playoff type of game where they need to advance? I mean, Grody, you've seen it. The guy has wheels.
Oh, yeah, which Almora did not have. Almora was great at getting a beat on a fly ball, like to make oversimplify. He was great at judging fly balls, was Albert Almora, for sure. Didn't have that kind of speed, but he was a good base runner, and he did tag first to second and scored a pretty big run for the Cubs in that game.
One of the best base running decisions of all time?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's those things that we get to talk about until we're all dead, because it's like there's so many sidebars when it comes to Game 7. I have... God, it's so weird because I was there. I was doing pre and post then, so I am part of the team essentially then in the booth, all of that stuff. I don't know. I mean, I know it's sunk in to a large degree. I haven't like dealt with it fully in my brain. And this is like in the good psychological way. I don't think I've ever watched the entire Game 7 start to finish. And it's not because, oh, I was there, I've seen it. But I don't know. It's like I just haven't been able to bring myself back to this golden moment that where there's so much that went into it, what it meant in so many different ways. I have not dealt with the Cubs winning the World Series properly in my life yet. But back to the Cubs of today and their playing desperately. Yeah, you had that play. Then you had Patrick Wisdom tagging up from third, trying to score at the plate, thrown out by Mike Yastrzemski. And I'm like, what are you doing going on that one? It's not hit that deeply. Yaz is coming in to catch it, so he's got like crazy momentum coming in. He's got a strong arm. The force was against you in that particular play, and you're out at the plate. But then I'm like, this is what it's come down to. The Cubs are playing desperate baseball. And then Ian Happ hits the three-run homer. Yay, yay, yay. Put that all away. And then Hector Neris gives up the home run to Estrada in the ninth. And yes, it is true. I'm glad that Megan Montemurro pointed it out, because it should be pointed out more that there was a catcher's interference on that play by Miguel Amaya, which got things messy. Look, Neris gave up the...
Mully's nickname for Hector Neris.
Is it really?
Hector Nervous.
I just stumbled. Molly, get out of my head, man! Yeah, but that's pretty good, though. Hector Nervous. If you're going to misspeak every once in a while, you get a win. And I think I just did. I just got on the same level as Mully, and I absolutely love it. But, yeah, I mean, to have recovered from that, five runs in each game or more, yes, there was guys left on base, but just there was a little tiny part of me that said, okay, you got through this series and you overcame some really bad moments on Monday, like colossally bad moments. We'll see what the drama is out at Wrigley Field tomorrow when it is the Cubs and the Mets and 120 here on the score. Shota Imanaga, 7-1 with a 1.89 ERA. So he's still got ridiculous looking numbers, even though there's been a couple blips here and there. And then good old Jose Quintana is pitching for the Mets. He now is in that special category I like to bring up every once in a while. Jose Quintana, player who has been around forever. We don't need to look at the actual number. Jose Quintana has been around forever. 2-5 with a 4.98 ERA. I'm Mark Grody. This is The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers. that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Nara spelled backwards siren. Damn, it is. I accidentally said Hector Neris. Was Hector nervous? Of course, he's heart attack Hector. I don't know. None of that seems as cute as it used to. Heart attack Hector. Woof. Man. But yeah, I mean, I asked Megan Montemurro who does she think will get the baseball for Craig Counsell tomorrow if it is a save situation for the Cubs. And she said Hector Neris. Quite frankly, that would be my answer too. I just, like, I don't know if Neris is going to last on this team, but for now, you're not giving the ball to, I don't think you're giving the ball to Colton Brewer. Yeah, I did like what I saw to Keegan Thompson, but is he even back? He and his wife just had a baby girl.
This is a stretch here. How about Drew Smyly?
Oh, no. No.
Not Drew Smyly?
Although Craig Counsell seems to really like Drew Smyly.
He has done well in that sort of seventh, eighth inning role the last few games.
It just doesn't sound like a closer. It just doesn't hit me correctly. Maybe it's not for rational reasons, though. Maybe you do try Drew Smyly as your closer. What a revelation that would be if it worked. It's not Tyson Miller. You know, it's God. And again, back to Hayden Wesneski. It's not Hayden Wesneski. And there was a time early in the season where I thought it could be that guy, but he just gives up a home run every time he gets the ball, and absolutely fast. The big news of the day today was that the Bulls traded Alex Caruso to the Oklahoma City Thunder for the 21-year-old guard Josh Giddey, number 6 overall pick in 2021 in the draft from Australia. Averaged just over 12 points a game this year, played in 80 games, started a ton in his 3 years in the NBA for Oklahoma City, ended up coming off the bench with some better options and better chemistry with some of the players that they had on Oklahoma City. So this kid's career is not yet a bust, and the Bulls look at this as, you know, potential. Can they get out of him? Can he fit in here where he didn't fit in there and get more out of him? Just a classic case of that. But he is so young. He's 21. I definitely think the Bulls, it is bizarre that the Bulls were not able to come away with a draft pick because of all the draft picks that Oklahoma City has at this point. So that is a disappointment. On the overall, though, I'm happy with it. I'm happy with it. Yes. It sucks that Alex Caruso is gone. He's the better player in this trade. Oklahoma City probably won the trade, but it's a bigger picture thing for me. The Bulls finally said it at the end of this season that this core ain't it, and now it begins. And now there are bigger questions like DeMar DeRozan. How is the signing or the trade for Giddey, how does that affect DeMar DeRozan coming back to this team? Obviously, it would probably move Coby White over to the two-guard spot. It lessens the chances of Zach LaVine being here. And, you know, Zach LaVine is still here right now, and almost everybody that I've talked to about LaVine says, yes, they've got to trade him. They're working on trading him. I think Casey Johnson had a story about him being shopped, and everybody's starting to circle around Zach LaVine right now because one way or the other, the breakup between the Bulls and Zach LaVine, like it's time for closure to occur, as in it's time for it to end. But I talked with Kendall Gill last night on the show, and from NBC Sports Chicago does pre and post with Jason Goff and Will Perdue, and they all do a tremendous job. And he came on yesterday, and he is still in support of Zach LaVine on this team. That brings me to Zach LaVine, and I look at it and maybe even oversimplified, and I say, he's going to be traded, right? I mean, they have to trade him at this point, right?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, they may trade him, but I don't think that, you know, it's a definite. You know, sometimes you can get with a player and, you know, sit down with he and the coach and the GM and try to work things out. You know, Zach is a talent. You know, I think that Zach, and if Zach wanted to be top 10 in the league, all he had to do, all he had to do is add defense to his game. And, you know, if they do trade him, I like to see them get equal value. It's tough to get equal value for a guy like that. You know, and most teams know that that he could possibly be traded or he will be on the trading block. So they're not going to give you equal value for him, you know. So I am hoping that in the long run, Zach and the Bulls can come to some type of happy medium and he can remain here. Because let's not forget, he was part of the first run that we had where the Bulls were number one in the Eastern Conference for that long a time. He was part of it. And, you know, he's a talented offensive player, one of the best in the league. And, you know, I made the mistake of leaving the Charlotte Hornets as a free agent when I was a third year in the league. I could not see the bright future that we could have had with me, Alonzo Mourning, and Larry Johnson as the big three. And, you know, I regret that decision even today, you know, because we could have done a lot of great things. But unfortunately, because of thinking the grass was greener on the other side, you know, I made a mistake. And, you know, I shouldn't have done that. And hopefully that won't happen here with the Bulls. Hopefully they can work things out.
That's really interesting on so many levels. I got a lot of questions going through my mind right now just hearing that story that I'm sure that you've told before, but I had not heard that. I didn't realize that you regretted that as much as you do. So what's running through my brain now is, how can you convince somebody of, you know, whatever Zach's age is, 28, 29 at this point, I may maybe a little bit younger, but how is it even possible to convince somebody of what might be better for them when you definitely, as you said with your story, you had that in your mind, this is what I'm doing and I don't care.
Right. Well, this is how you convince them. You got to tell them, listen, a rising tide lifts all boats, okay? Had I remained with the Charlotte Hornets, I probably would have made, you know, two or three all-star teams. I probably would have made two or three all-defensive teams, you know, because that team was rising. I mean, we were all averaging around 18 to 20 points a game. We were winning, you know, but I couldn't see the light, you know. And I think if Zach comes back and you know, he can see the future of what these guys did before, and if the Bulls can get on the run and play the way that they played two years ago or 3 years ago when Alonzo and DeMar came aboard, then everybody is going to get noticed and everybody will get recognition. And that's what I try to get young players to see, that if you work together and you win, everybody is going to get recognized. Everybody is going to get the shine that they're seeking.
How difficult would it be, though, to, and I'm not saying, again, the relationship is a disaster, but there'd be some repairing that would be needed in the relationship. Is that plausible?
Yeah, I'm sure that there needs to be a lot of repairing in the relationship. But guess what? Winning cures all. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can come together and you can win, everybody forgets what happened in the past. And, you know, they go on and, you know, they're glad that they stayed together. So, you know, hopefully, you know, I don't know what's going on in the front office. I don't know where they are or anything like this. This is just my perspective.
Yeah.
I would just like to see them keep those core guys together and then build around them.
I thought there was some really good stuff from Kendall Gill right there. I disagree with Kendall Gill. I think it's time to move on from Zach LaVine. And I know, like, he's still young enough and athletic enough and talented enough that there's still, like, the temptation to want Zach LaVine on your team because there's so much that appears that is there. But we have seen a lot of this, and I do think that there has been harm done in the relationship that probably at this point cannot be repaired. But I did like that something of a idealistic view from Kendall Gill and just admitting some things about his own career, which I had not heard, and I found that to be very fascinating. A simple way to listen to Mullen Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, Parkinson Spiegel, and everything the Score has to offer is with the free Odyssey app. That's the way I listen to all those guys. Follow 670 The Score in the Odyssey app and take us wherever you may go. 312-644-6767 is the number. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What's up? Here for a few more minutes on The Score. Tomorrow at 6 o'clock, it is the premiere of A Salute to Sandberg that I will be hosting. It's a one-hour documentary honoring the legacy of Ryne Sandberg before his statue is unveiled at Wrigley Field on Sunday. So I hope that you will tune in tomorrow night from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. right here on The Score, your home for the Cubs. 670 The Score and the Odyssey app as well. I had really bad timing today with the White Sox game. The White Sox game was a day game today. White Sox and Astros out on the south side. I had to get a tire fixed, so I was driving around getting that done, and I had my Odyssey app with me, but I was kind of being intermittent about it while I was trying to get things done. I tuned into the game in the first inning. I heard a Yordan Alvarez homer. I heard a Luis Robert drop, and I'm like kind of dedicating part of my day to paying attention to the White Sox, and this is what I'm getting. And then even before the game, I've got poor Darren Jackson given the lineup with no voice whatsoever, and I'm like, Len, give DJ a break, and they finally did. So I hope he's okay. It sounded just like laryngitis, and then Connor finally took over. So, but I was like, what is going on here? So then I checked in a little bit later on in the seventh. I let some time go by. I heard Justin Anderson walking, who was Jeremy Pena with the bases loaded to make it 5-3 Houston. And apparently the Sox had a lead, and then Houston overtook them later on in the game. It all added up to the Astros beating the White Sox by a final score of 5-3. So I don't know. Is that how most people take in White Sox games this year, whether on radio or television? Kind of just very intermittently. Like, maybe I'll check on this. Maybe I'll turn it on. Something's going down. I just don't know how people. And the diehards who just like doesn't matter to you, and you're probably younger too, you haven't been hurt enough, might still be watching and loving every second of it. That's very true. I know that I have my diehard White Sox fan friends, like my buddy Dan Dorfman, White Sox historian. He has written for 670thescore.com, did a whole history on this radio station, as a matter of fact. He even, like, not watching a whole lot of White Sox baseball, goes to every game he gets a chance to go to. Still loves going to the ballpark, but I feel like I know more about the White Sox and their lineup than he does right now. And like I said, Dan is like a legit White Sox historian. So Sox lost again today. 5-3, the final score. Thanks for listening and texting today. Thanks to Cody Westerlund for coming on the show. Chris Emma was on. Megan Montemurro talking about the Chicago Cubs. Tyler Farengold doing a great job of producing this show. I am Mark Grody. I'll be back tomorrow night at 6 o'clock for A Salute to Sandberg. Be here for the world premiere on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, Mark Grody, beautiful man.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but
It's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What's up? Here for a few more minutes on The Score. Tomorrow at 6 o'clock, it is the premiere of A Salute to Sandberg that I will be hosting. It's a one-hour documentary honoring the legacy of Ryne Sandberg before his statue is unveiled at Wrigley Field on Sunday. So I hope that you will tune in tomorrow night from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. right here on The Score, your home for the Cubs. 670 The Score and the Odyssey app as well. I had really bad timing today with the White Sox game. The White Sox game was a day game today. White Sox and Astros out on the south side. I had to get a tire fixed, so I was driving around getting that done, and I had my Odyssey app with me. But I was kind of being intermittent about it while I was trying to get things done. I tuned into the game in the first inning. I heard a Yordan Alvarez homer. I heard a Luis Robert drop. And I'm like kind of dedicating part of my day to paying attention to the White Sox. And this is what I'm getting. And then even before the game, I've got poor Darren Jackson giving the lineup with no voice whatsoever. And I'm like, Len, do the lineup. Give DJ a break, and they finally did. So I hope he's okay. It sounded just like laryngitis, and then Connor finally took over. So, but I was like, what is going on here? So then I checked in a little bit later on in the seventh. I let some time go by, and I heard Justin Anderson walking. Who was it? Jeremy Pena with the bases loaded to make it 5-3 Houston, and apparently the Sox had a lead, and then Houston overtook them later on in the game. It all added up to the Astros beating the White Sox by a final score of 5-3. So, I don't know. Is that how most people take in White Sox games this year, whether on radio or television? Kind of just very intermittently? Like, maybe I'll check on this. Maybe I'll turn it on. Something's going down. I just don't know how people... The diehards who just, like, doesn't matter to you, and you're probably younger, too, you haven't been hurt enough, might still be watching and loving every second of it. That's very true. I know that I have my diehard White Sox fan friends, like my buddy Dan Dorfman, White Sox historian. He has written for 670thescore.com, did a whole history on this radio station, as a matter of fact. He even, like, not watching a whole lot of White Sox baseball, goes to every game he gets a chance to go to, still loves going to the ballpark, but I feel like I know more about the White Sox and their lineup than he does right now. And like I said, Dan is like a legit White Sox historian. So Sox lost again today, 5-3 the final score. Thanks for listening and texting today. Thanks to Cody Westerlund for coming on the show. Chris Emma was on. Megan Montemurro talking about the Chicago Cubs. Tyler Farengold doing a great job of producing this show. I am Mark Grody. I'll be back tomorrow night at 6 o'clock for A Salute to Sandberg. Be here for the world premiere on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, Mark Grody, beautiful man.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.